I've been working on my own brand work and thinking about what are the three main areas on which I want my business to rest. And one of them is fun, and one of them is community, and I'm still deciding what the third one is.
My name is Paul Harvey, and this is Life, Passion, and Business. We're about helping you explore, finding your passion for life and the work that you do. But it's so much more than that. It's about finding clues to the big life questions. What does it mean to be successful? What is the meaning of life? If you're looking for more, then join me on this journey, where together we will discover through interviews, tools, and tips how to live life full of meaning, passion, and purpose. And welcome to the show. Today I have Deborah Ager with me, and she is a book coach. Like many of my guests, she is a LinkedIn connection, and I saw while reading one of her posts a few weeks back, it's kind of comment that gave me cause to Google her name. And to my surprise, I discovered that she has a Wikipedia page. Just like a real celebrity, she will be my first guest ever on this show with a page on Wikipedia. But Deborah is not your media celeb. She is, however, a published poet. So what is life like for a famous poet? We will find out soon. But before we go there, here's one of my usual segues. I was in a conversation this week about challenge. And I may have mentioned this a few weeks back. We were looking at replacing the word struggle with challenge. But I would like to consider the human need for challenge. You see, it struck me from all of my conversations I've had over the last 18 months, there's a strong human desire to push against a boundary and to experience the challenge. Now, we may be reluctant to change, but we do appreciate the progression when we do. Of course, there are times in life when we need to sit back and take the breeze, but the danger of getting stuck in that place is where life becomes stale and boring. We all know people who hate their jobs, but do not leave them and they stay there for just about ever. See, that's the point where they won't accept the challenge of moving forward. Now, I know this from personal experience, because prior to starting this podcast, I allowed myself and my life to become small, and that led to some dark places. And I wouldn't call it depression, but it certainly was a lackluster for the journey. In fact, I kind of thought the journey was somewhat over and I was just waiting for the final call, which is a bit young to be doing that, really, isn't it? But I lost my appreciation for life, and it took the death of my father to recognize my downward spiral. Now, this is the human condition. We are destined to become dull and discontented if we stop pushing forward. You know, there's a popular exercise that you'll find in most self-help books, and it's like, what would you do with your life if money was no object and you could not fail? And I actually have to say, I find that a bloody difficult question to answer. And I've asked myself that several times. And I actually don't know. And I guess if money was no object, I would throw myself into the climate challenge crisis and find some way of making a difference. But I can still do that without money and with the same awareness. And I am, on a level, exploring our own liability for climate change and considering how I might be part of the bigger picture. So I'm doing that without money. So I started this little segue looking at challenge and whether we need it. Because from my perspective, the overriding opinion is yes, we do. So what are you doing to challenge yourself? Do you agree with me? I would love to hear from you. Anyway, back to this week's guest, the book coach, that is Deborah Ager. Deborah is the founder of the Booked Activation Method, and she's been writing professionally for over 20 years. As I said at the beginning, there are published works of poetry. Her writing started early. She wrote copy for the citrus industry, and her words sold lots of grapefruit. And she discovered 57 ways to describe an orange. It was enough to put herself through graduation school and at University of Florida for creative writing. What else would you do? Before stepping out on her own, most of her employers discovered that she could write and entrusted her with the big proposals, the sales copy, the persuasive PowerPoint presentations. She has the skills to persuade people to change how they see something. In the 5 years since, she's helped dozens of business owners develop business books faster than they could alone. So far, she has collaborated on over 22 books. I hope you enjoy the conversation with Deborah Agar. So welcome to Life, Passion and Business. And I am delighted today to welcome Deborah Agar to the show. Now, I have known Deborah for a while. I've seen her about social media. We're friends on LinkedIn. And she mentioned something in a post the other day. And I, for some reason, I chose to look her up. And I have never had a guest on the show that has a Wikipedia page. Deborah Agar is a poet and a writer and does lots of other things too. So I'm really looking forward to exploring that story with Deborah. So Deborah, thank you and welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here. And I see you discovered my deep, dark past as a poet.
Yeah. Well, it's quite something to get a Wikipedia page because it's actually quite difficult to do, I think. You have to have quite citations and all sorts of bits and pieces to get a page like that. So well done. So tell me, Deborah, what's the story? Because obviously, as you say, you have been a poet and clearly writing has been a serious part of your history. And I know what you do. I know you help people write their books, but you didn't start doing that. You obviously had a journey to get there. So what was the journey like for you?
It is true. So I actually started my own first book in a journal, a red spiral-bound journal, and I wrote by hand. And that's when I was a kid. And I always had books going on. And I would paste in my pictures and all different kinds of things. And then when I was in my 20s, I decided to go to grad school. So I went to the University of Florida and I earned a Master of Fine Arts in poetry writing, or creative writing technically, but with a concentration in poetry. And, you know, because I wanted to make the big bucks. Because, you know, poetry is most people do it for the love of it.
I didn't think poetry was a way of earning money, to be honest. I thought, most famous poets are dead ones. Sorry.
Yes, I know. Yeah, that was a little bit of sarcasm, I suppose. So to put myself through grad school, I became a copywriter in Gainesville, Florida. And then I did similar work after I graduated from that program. And I moved into digital marketing. So that's one reason why I became interested. I think we probably connected through digital marketing methods online, and I began to work as a digital marketer, and I worked at some large nonprofit organizations leading different kinds of digital marketing programs. Mm-hmm. And then through that process of becoming better at marketing and combining that with my writing skill, during that same time, I was authoring my own books. So I authored a poetry book, and then I was an editor on a few books. I don't mean edit as in changing what other people wrote per se, but more like gathering different kinds of material to become part of an anthology. So one of those was born out of a magazine that I founded in 2003. Mm-hmm. And the other one was born out of an idea that a colleague of mine had. And I said, hey, you know, I love your idea. How about we team up on it? He said, yes. And so we split the work in half and put this book together. So those were three of my own book projects that I worked on. And then someone reached out to me and said, after we had many conversations about inbound marketing, about digital marketing, about writing, and he said, look, I'd really like you to help me with my next book. And I said, well, I don't write books, you know, for other people. I had not done that before. And he said, well, I think you'd be good at it and I'd like you to do that for me. So we worked together and that project was wonderful. And I thought, you know what? I could create a niche where I help people with marketing and sales as their background create books on different kinds of topics. So that's kind of how I started my business today.
Mm-hmm. So did you work in the real world as in like, cause I mean, digital world is something else. Did you work like for people as in what sort of jobs have you had before getting there?
Yeah. So I was the director of digital. I think I was called the director of digital marketing at the American Red Cross. And I oversaw search engine optimization. Some people call it organic search. Yeah. Which is basically getting people to come to the website, you know, just for anyone who's listening, who's not savvy about digital marketing. And then the other thing I oversaw was all of the advertising. So that would include Google AdWords, Yahoo, Bing, what's called DSP or, demand side platform, those kinds of advertising that would bring people to the website. So that was one of the jobs I had. And then I had some other ones. One was working in digital marketing to sell financial newsletters. And I oversaw the pay-per-click and search engine optimization there. And then for another company that was actually related to that first one, that had more of a health newsletter focus, I helped them sell products again using the same digital marketing method. So I worked in SEO and PPC for quite a long time.
It's quite technical stuff you were involved in. So,
yeah, it was technical. Getting the landing, working with tech teams to make sure the landing pages are functioning, tracking everything, all that stuff. It's true. It was very technical.
Yeah. And so where was your passion in all of this? Because, I mean, those are quite techie jobs, aren't they, really? Whereas writing something different.
I really loved the marketing strategy part of it. And I loved figuring out a lot of the problems that would pop up, because anyone who's worked in digital marketing knows trying to get all those different systems to talk to each other can be really challenging. So working with a team and figuring out how to solve those problems is really exciting. And then also I did a lot of translation of how Google searches work. So for instance, it's some of these different companies that I won't call out certain names of the companies because I don't want to reveal the people, but basically people would say, look, I don't understand. How are people coming to our website? Like, I don't understand what you do. Like, what is this SEO thing? So I would explain how keywords work and how we're on Google and we search for things. And then that brings people to our website, and then how that translates into revenue for the organization. And they would say, oh, okay, now I understand. So sometimes it was just translating that, because that was necessary. That communication was necessary in order to make a case that we needed money for the advertising, or we needed money for the program in order to bring more money into the organization, whether it was donations or whether it was sales of a newsletter or whether it was something else. So, yeah.
And so obviously you move writing. So the writing you've always been doing, it sounds very technical writing. Because poetry is creative writing, whereas you've moved to technical writing. So it sounds like the passion wasn't the writing itself. It was more the organization and skills around it.
I'd say in my day job, yes. When I worked as a copywriter, it was very interesting to me to create stories. So I wrote catalogs for the gift fruit industry in Florida, and I would make up a lot of stories about people out in the groves, families who, fictional families who own the groves, and then make up stories about the people who are parts of those families. So that was kind of fun. And but I think as time went on, I wanted to try something in addition to copywriting, because the idea of copywriting for the next 20 years of my life just seemed like it would be too much of the same thing. And I'm someone who likes to add to my skill set, and I like to learn new things. So then when SEO and digital, it kind of seemed like the new frontier back then, and it was really fun to learn about. And so so I added that to my skill mix.
Copywriting for technical copywriting can be very boring, can't it? I know people love their products, but you can only polish pipes so much, can't you, really?
That's true. And I've seen actually out there where a lot of copywriters do move on to other areas. And I think that that's a natural evolution. I think when you have a strength with words, it really gives you strength for your business, because we need words in order to communicate. Those lovely videos that you do on LinkedIn, that you had to write scripts, or you had to map out what you're going to say, whether someone's writing for a post, a social media post, or copy for their website. It's really powerful, really. To
let you know the secret, they come out my head. I don't script them at all.
Oh, wow. Oh, my gosh. Well, you're quite good at it. You're natural then.
Well, I struggle to get over 5 minutes. I could get over 5 minutes, but I can be a bit repetitive. But yeah, I don't write a script on those. So I may put some words on a piece of paper before and try and hit the words, but I don't script them.
That's kind of what I do at this point. I started out with a script in the early days, but as I became more comfortable with the platform, then I find I really just need the bullet points, and then I kind of know what the architecture is. And I think that happens when you become more skilled at it. You don't need as much preparation.
I know my subject. If you know your subject, you can do that sort of stuff. You don't know.
Yeah. Exactly.
You got me on something I didn't know. it's not so easy. But I guess I'm used to talking on these things, so it's probably quite where it comes from, probably.
Yeah, that could be.
So it sounds like you've found yourself your ideal niche in terms of, as you said, you help people with books. Do you help anyone, or do you pick any subject, or are there passion places for you in terms of, I really like this area?
Well, I'm working with a lot of coaches now. So I've shifted my focus slightly to work with coaches. It doesn't mean I'll never work with someone who has a specialty in sales or marketing. I definitely would. But I find that people who work in leadership coaching or who coach other people to do something, I find the ways that they think about things are really interesting. And they also understand what I'm doing for them as their book coach. So then, so that makes things flow really well between us. So that's my focus at present.
I always wonder about this kind of book, these books in certain niches, because it's like, you know, I've got my own way of approaching, I guess, digital marketing. I'm a digital marketer like yourself. It's like, and lots of our colleagues, people we know, have books out there. And I was, oh, perhaps I could write a book. And I go, why would I bother? There are so many books out there on the same subject. How could I bring anything new to it? So how do you bring something new to an old topic? Because there's only a couple of ways of doing something. There may be more ways of doing, approaching something. They are the same kind of process.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And it's that's a question that a lot of people have, actually, when they come to me. They'll say, should I even write a book? Or who am I to write a book? You know, why should I even be doing this? There's so many other books on the shelf about leadership, development, or whatever it is. And what I find in most cases is that everyone has their unique perspective of how they work with people. Because really, we could say the same thing about our businesses, right? Why do any of us need to? There are other people who do what you do. There are other people who do what I do. So why work with us? Well, like for me, for instance, I have taken coach training program. So I'm not a certified coach, but I know a lot about coaching and I have coached leaders before. So that's something else I've done that kind of adds to my toolkit. And I'm not as skilled as my clients at coaching. However, I do understand the foundation of what they do. So that helps set me apart from other people who also do what I do. So I feel like, you know, in what I do, for instance, there's so many different ghostwriters. I know one who specializes in more in medical and diet books. She was doing diet books for a long time. There's somebody else who works specifically to tell memoir type stories for a lot of celebrities and well-known people. So she has her niche there. So I feel like there's different ways that people approach their work, as well as their different experiences and their different background and knowledge that will then inform not only their work, but also any kind of book that they want to write. So, and that really comes out. And so we do that through the first step of my process is clarifying the audience. I call it mastering your market. And we really dive into what it is that sets you apart so that you know exactly how your book will stand out in the marketplace.
So have you had any people that you kind of go, this is never going to work?
It's not the topic so much. It's more that I do ask people, you know, will they be able to make the time? So if someone tells me they have no time, and if they really believe they have no time, I did actually say to someone in one of my workshops that I taught in the Washington, D.C. area, I said, if you truly believe that you have absolutely no time to work on your book, then you don't have time to work on your book, then maybe you just shouldn't do it right now.
Yeah,
but and maybe just, until you have the
priorities.
Time.
That's just priorities. It's like
it is. I know. The point that I was trying to make.
I've got no time to go to the gym. I can't spend an hour at the gym and I'll watch Netflix for 2 or 3 hours and kind of go, oh,
that right.
It's like, yeah, I've got time. It's just about how you're choosing to use it.
Exactly. And so that's, you know, through, she was sort of surprised because I think she wanted me to try to persuade her. But what I wanted to do was invite her to persuade herself, you know, if she wanted to do that. Right. And it's not always the right time for everybody to work on a book. I mean, not everybody needs a book right now. And someone really has to be ready for it. So if they're ready for it, then they'll make a good candidate for working with me. But if they're not ready for it and they don't want to make the time or they don't want to prioritize it right now, then it's probably better just to wait, because otherwise they'll be fighting against themselves to try to get it done. And that's
what's been
fun.
The most fun book you've written, the most funny or interesting thing you've done?
There's so many of them. So one that I worked on recently that was a lot of fun was on, it tied in personal storytelling to financial planning and estate planning, primarily for women, to help women create a secure financial future. So that was an enjoyable project because we wove the story into the overall book and made what a lot of people find to be a scary or dry topic be more interesting. And it really affects lives positively. And then another one I worked on that was really enjoyable is a leadership book, which is all about workplace civility and about changing cultures from the inside out to make them healthier. And so that's something that as an employee, I really felt like a lot of organizations could benefit from that kind of knowledge. So working on books like that makes me really happy.
So what is success for you? Because, you know, we all have this success model that we were given when we were growing up. So what is success? Because obviously, I think the modern success, and I say this every week, but the modern success model is pretty much broken, because like we don't go into a job for years and retire at a certain age. We have a compartmented life these days. But what's success for you?
Yeah. So are you saying like kind of the traditional idea of success would be to keep the job for 30 years?
Well, success was, wasn't it? Study hard, you know, get a good job, settle down, find a partner, have a family, buy a house, have your car, do all these things, then retire. That was the success model that we were sold.
That's a good question. So I've been working on my own brand work and thinking about what are the three main areas on which I want my business to rest. And one of them is fun, and one of them is community. And I'm still deciding what the third one is. I think three is a good number to have for this. So one of them is just is making sure that I'm having fun, which is always challenging to do. And I was reminded of something I already knew the other day, which was it's not really about what we end up achieving or you know, that we got the 10 people in our program or that we got the gold watch for ourselves or whatever it is, but it's more about enjoying the steps on the journey. So enjoying a conversation with you, for instance, you know, or enjoying making friends online, or you know, going out and having coffee in real life with somebody near where I live, something like that. So making sure that we're really taking time to stop and enjoy things is really important. And so I think if I'm doing that and then also helping people spread good messages, then to me that's success. And I know a lot of times, especially in the digital marketing world, we always hear, you know, and then I made $1 million and all I did was send one email, right? Like we always hear these kinds of stories. And I understand why people do that. It's important because they need to show that they can get results. Yeah. At the same time, I feel like it does. And also, you know, a lot of people are feeling like they don't have this or that. And so if they can get it, that would make them happy. But I feel like there's something else that's often missing in that kind of marketing, which is about the satisfaction that we all feel from doing good work and also from helping other people do good work. And so one of the things I like about working with my clients is that I can't do what they do, but I can help them get that message out to more people, and that will help more people in a way that I do not have the skills to help. But I can help them with this one piece that helps them do that. So that's what really makes me happy and is why I keep going every day and doing the work I do.
So what's fun for you? That isn't always an interesting question. By the time we get into our 40s, it's like, what is fun?
That's a good, yeah. So one of the things I like to do is go to several art events every month, and that can look like different things. So my husband and I went to the Kennedy Center a few months ago to see a musical. And then more recently, I went to the Hirshhorn Museum in Washington, D.C. They had a really cool interactive exhibit. I went there with a neighbor of mine, which was really fun. Mm-hmm. And then friends of ours invited us downtown into D.C. to an art event that took place in like this huge kind of warehouse area. And all different people had made sculpture, painting, you know, photography. There was all different kinds of art in all the different rooms. And that was a blast just to walk through.
It sounds like art is a big thing for you.
Yeah, I love art, visual art, musical performances.
Yeah.
For my anniversary, my husband and I went to go see a band called X-Hex downtown. So that was fun too. So yeah, just really trying to get out and see people, go out to dinner with friends. It falls under that community/connection idea, I guess, of my life/brand, which is just connecting with people and being sure that I see people in real life, in addition to online.
So. It's fun because I've been exploring this. I'm in a daily coaching group at the moment. We meet every single day at 7 a.m.
Oh, wow.
And it's fascinating what's coming out of that. So there's been lots of kind of stuff coming out of it. And every 2 weeks is a new coach kind of holding the 30-minute slot in the morning. So it's really fascinating. But one of them, we were looking at fun. Last week was all about happiness, and one was fun. And I was remembering that when I was a child, I really enjoyed playing with Lego, which is the little Lego bricks. And when my son got to the point where he was playing with Lego, that fun, that enjoyment of playing with Lego, because I could play with him with Lego, really came back to me. There was this real sense of connecting with that energy of my childhood by playing with this toy with my son. But here's the thing. We've still got the Lego. I can't play with it now and get the same enjoyment. So it's really interesting how, you know, when I was 10, I could get fun out of this thing. And yet when I was 45, I could still get fun out of this thing. But I guess it was different because it was the it was the joy on my son's face and experiencing his joy and my joy building things together.
Right.
So it's the question, what was the fun? Was it the expression with together? I guess it was the community working together with my son and him getting fun out of enjoying working with me on this. So I just love that idea of exploring fun in terms of like, well, what was fun before? When does something go fun and then it ceases to become fun?
Mm-hmm.
I'm still in the conversation, I have to say. But it's like, how do we make time for fun in our lives? And you obviously do with art, and it's nice to hear that you've got that connection.
Yeah, I'm taking a trip to France at some point, and I've been learning French, and I realized, brushing up on French. I have very basic, rudimentary knowledge, but it's been really fun just to learn new words and to puzzle things out and to see the ways that it is or is not similar to Spanish.
That's very enjoyable when you're there and you can use the language. That's really enjoyable, I have to agree.
Yeah, and then, I was at the grocery store the other day and somebody spoke to somebody else in French. You know, the cashier, the person checking me out, spoke to another customer in French and they had a brief exchange. And I thought, oh, I could understand it. I was too scared to say anything to the cashier because then I thought, oh, then he'll speak back to me and I'll have to understand and it could get complicated. But I could understand their brief exchange, and that was very satisfying.
You just reminded me, actually, I'm laughing. You just reminded me. My wife and I went to Germany on business, 10 years ago or so now. We had a company we were working on together. And so we were at a trade show, and then we were taking a train somewhere and getting a train back. And I had done German at school and I'd studied German a bit, but that was well before I met my wife. And someone sat next to us. And so I opened a conversation with them and I started this conversation in German. And the most interesting thing was the look on my wife's face, because she had no knowledge that I had this language. And I could have this conversation. It was really funny afterwards because I didn't even speak German because I can't.
That is so funny. That's hilarious.
But I could ask where this person lived and how long they lived there and, you know, that sort of stuff. And did they have any family? Yeah. But this stuff came flooding back and it was really weird. So, yes, I can understand the joy of a language. And it's reminded me, it would be nice to reconnect with that, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
So thank you for that. It reminded me.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I love your story about that, too. It's really fun. It's like it stays there in our brains, you know, and then it can surface. I was in Costa Rica once and then I encountered a person who was Chinese and didn't speak English. And then all this Chinese surfaced. I was like, where'd that come from? But I must've woken up that part of my brain by speaking Spanish. And it was there, like activated or something.
This is about for me. I'm interested in your business, but I'm more interested in how you bring the passion of your life into your business. That's what this is about. You know, business is just business. It's the secondary thing, but you know, there's so much more to us as human beings, and that's what I'm exploring, is how do we bring that bit of ourselves to our work?
Yeah, well, it's fascinating.
How do you bring your fun into your work?
Well, I love laughing with clients. Sometimes we just laugh about things. You know, we just have fun in conversation. I mean, they're all over the place, so I can't always be with them in person. But I think it's about finding the joy in their own work and finding the joy in the ideas and the process of creation. So some of the outlining work I do with people, it's such a fun and creative process itself. I think people are scared of it. I mean, in fact, I know they are because they tell me I'm a little scared. I'm worried my ideas won't be good, but we go through and we just start having a conversation kind of like this one. And we work through, but except in that conversation, we're working through ideas and I'm asking them questions and they'll think, oh, wow, that's a really good question. I hadn't thought of it that way before. And, you know, the questions are just, they arise for me in the moment based on what I'm hearing them say and also what I'm not hearing them say. Mm-hmm. And that's really fun for me as someone who studied coaching. And I think it's also fun for them, especially if they're coaches, because they're not having to be the coach for once. They're getting a break from that. And they're getting to be kind of in the chair with someone asking them about what they care about, yeah, and what they like to do, yeah, and what they like to think about. So I think I work with a lot of thinkers, and I think that we like to think together and that we think that that's fun. And so then some of that joy and passion comes out through that. And also I think, you know, I hear this from you too, but I mean, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm interested in a lot of different things, you know, art and music and languages. And, you know, right now I'm reading some history books about France. So I'm interested in history and tying all the different pieces together. And I think that having that kind of curiosity makes me, helps me serve my clients better. Because when they bring up something like, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, okay, well, I've read about that and I've studied about that and I've seen how it's mentioned in this book and that book. And so here's how we can, you know, mm-hmm, include the ideas or concepts. So it's like when they bring things up, I often, if I don't know about it, it's something that I'll research if it's something really specific that I might not know about. But if it's, but it oftentimes, you know, it might be something I know about or at least a little bit about. And so I can offer some ideas around it or share with them what people might be.
Okay, so we were talking before we were rudely interrupted by whatever update decided to crash my systems, I don't know. We were talking about the fun you had enjoying working with clients and how much it can be really fun and funny working with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think, oh yeah, so I don't know where we got cut off. I guess I'll just backtrack a little bit. So one of the things that I find so fun with working with clients is the conversation we have, especially when we're first trying to figure out the ideas in their book.
Yeah.
Did you hear that part before?
Yeah, that's the bit, isn't it? Okay. It's that exploration process, isn't it? That, I guess.
Yes.
I guess it's as you say, it's a conversation with this one, isn't it? It's a fireside conversation that takes you somewhere.
Exactly. So yeah, and there's a lot of aha moments, and I think people really love to clarify their ideas, and then just having fun with the creative process. I think the people I work with anyway, they know they want to create a book, so they're already primed to be people who enjoy the creative process. Or even if they might not say that, they do enjoy it once they're in it.
So what about you? How do you stay focused? What's your process? Do you have a daily routine? Because I have morning routines. I have all sorts of things to keep me chunking along. Mm-hmm. As a self-employed individual, without someone going, do the work.
Yes. So I sort of have guidelines for monthly, but I find what works well for me is to know what I'm going to do every week. So I usually take time on Sunday. If I don't do it on Sunday, then I do it Monday morning, mm-hmm, and figure out, you know, what are the things that I need to do within that, you know, within the week to, mm-hmm, make whatever it is that I want to have happen. And a lot of it stays the same. It's sort of the same things. I have a weekly live show on Wednesdays. I do certain things in my Facebook group almost every day. I have certain things I do on LinkedIn, you know, for marketing. And then, mm-hmm, I have other kinds of things that I do as well. So yeah, having that is really helpful. I didn't have that when I first started, and I would just sort of spin my wheels and not really know what to be working on at any given time.
So. Yeah, it's quite difficult unless you set processes.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm at the point in the podcast where I have this question, which is the surprise question that most people get. And it's the one question what is the one question that I haven't asked you that I should have done?
Oh, that's a hard question.
I know. That's why it's asked.
Let's see.
Which is an opportunity to say what you like, really, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. I guess I don't think you asked me why I do this work. So the reason why I do this work is because I believe in serving those who aim to improve humanity in some way. Mm-hmm. And that's why I focus on the people I focus as my target market. And it does tie into what I was saying before a little bit when I was talking about how I can't do what my clients do. So, but I can help them get their messages out there. I can help them clarify their message. I can help them put it into a book format and then be able to get it out there to more people. Mm-hmm. Because I can't do their work, but I can help them expand the audience for what it is that they talk about and what it is that they do. So, yeah. And so it basically all boils down to, I believe in serving those who aim to improve humanity in some way.
Oh, well, that sounds good. Yeah. So are there more books inside Deborah?
Yes. And I am working on one now, which is a novel. My husband is a novelist, so it runs in the family, I guess. My daughter likes to write as well. So yeah, I've got some things I'm working on. Most recently I wrote, or one recent piece I wrote last year was on beer can collectors in the United States. Mm-hmm. They meet in hotels across America to trade old beer cans. So I went and I interviewed a bunch of them, and I interviewed someone who may have the largest collection in the world. So I find that those kinds of projects take me out of my normal zone in which I dwell and get me out talking to different kinds of people. So that's another way to have fun too, at least for me.
It's quite surreal what people do, isn't it? When you see like people collect beer cans. I mean, do they sit mm-hmm. around talking about a beer can? Like, oh, I caught that beer can that I saw. Yeah, it's just, you just can't believe that conversation, can you really? how they talk about beer cans they've seen and gone or bought or what have you. It's a bit like stamp collecting, I suppose. It's just as strange.
Yeah, and going to a house that has probably, how many beer cans? 90 plus thousand beer cans all in one house. It's pretty over the top, remarkable how many can fit into this one building.
Yeah. Yeah, it is, isn't it? It's remarkable. But I guess that's the whole thing about art, isn't it? About those things of that, what is art? And you know, we have a thing called the Tate Modern here in London. Now, I live mm-hmm. in Scotland, but I mean, I used to live in London. And the Tate Modern is an old power station. It's a massive building. It's a massive building. So they've filled this place with the kind of different floors and different bits of art. And I remember when I first went in there, and it was just so funny walking around this building, seeing these pieces of modern art. And one of them, you know, one of them literally was some stuff that had been compacted in a rubbish compactor, and it was just a pile of rubbish compacted, you know, with straps around it. And it's like, well, I guess it is, but it's like, and it's this thing about art gives a reaction in you, doesn't it? It's not just what it looks like, it's the reaction you get from looking at it.
Did it smell?
No, it just was a pile of rubbish compressed. Huh. The other one, which I did think was funny, and I had a laugh with it, but apparently I was the only one that found it funny, was this mass of stones. They were all just laid in a big circle. And there was this security guard watching it, and I said to the security guard, do you ever move a few stones around, see if anyone will notice? It was that funny. But I thought it was hilarious, because how would you tell if anyone had moved an odd stone around on this pile on the floor? You wouldn't
that
know.
That is funny. Yeah. Right, you wouldn't know.
He didn't find it that funny.
No sense of humor.
No sense of humor. But I guess he gets asked the question all day long.
Yeah, that's true.
So what kind of people do you think are the best people to talk to you if they want to write their book? Are you good with anybody, or do you have a particular... I know you said coaches, but is it female coaches, male coaches?
I work with men and women. I work with men and women, and a lot of them might be coaches of marketing. Like they help other people learn how to market or get more leads. Some people do executive coaching inside organizations to help organizations be healthier. Some people have an HR background, human resources background. So those kinds of folks. And then also sometimes people want to speak, and that's why they want a book. So a lot of people come to me because they're speaking already, and they want to have a book so that they can get on bigger stages at larger conferences. Yeah. And I guess, you know, people don't have to be ready right away, but just to know that, to keep things in perspective and to be realistic, it does take time to create a book and, you know, to create a high quality book. So
if someone's thinking about working with you to write a book, what kind of time frame would they be looking at to kind of get a book written?
Yeah. So it's about, to create the book itself, just the words on paper, a comfortable time frame is about 6 months. Some people take a little bit longer. But, and then to get it ready for Amazon can take anywhere from 1 month to 2 months. It really depends on the client a little bit and how many changes they might need. But usually within, you know, 6 to 8 months, or, you know, sometimes I've had clients who need to be away because they've got business to attend to. And so sometimes it will take longer. But at the actual working on the book part usually only takes 6 to 8 months.
And how many words are we talking about in the book?
I worked on some that are about 20,000 pages. So it's a very short book, and a lot of people like to do those. And
20,000 words, not pages, I think you mean.
20,000 words, yes, that's correct. Which would be just under 100 pages. Yeah. And then 25,000 words would be about 100 or so pages. So somewhere in that neighborhood, usually not something that's 200 pages. It might even be up to 150, somewhere around there.
So 40,000 words is high, is it?
For a business book, what I find is a lot of people want something very short and to the point. So it's not high for, say, a trade paperback that comes out through a traditional publisher, but for self-publishing, usually people keep it on the shorter side. It's not a requirement. It's just a preference that a lot of my clients seem to have. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. So how can they find you? How can people find you if they want to work with Deborah Agar?
Oh, they can go to my website. I'm at www.radiantmedialabs.com. Okay. And they can also look for me on LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn a lot under my name. Those are two good ways to find me. Okay.
So the links will be on the podcast, no problem at all. So, but it's always nice to hear the links aloud. Yeah. So the final question I ask everybody on this podcast, and it's one of the most important questions that we all have to deal with, really. You know, we're born into this life, into this world, and we grow up, and then eventually we leave it. So what's it all for? What is the meaning of life? Why are we here?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think it's, for me, it's the betterment of mankind, or the betterment of humanity. So mm-hmm. that's kind of what I've always geared my life towards doing with my jobs and also with my business.
That's very succinct.
How about you? What's yours?
My meaning of love, well, my purpose tends to be moving people forward. I always seem to kind of, that's like, it's kind of a coaching thing that I do with people, but it doesn't necessarily need to be coaching. I seem to move people forward. As for the meaning of life, this is why this podcast is here, because I didn't know 18 months ago. And I think kind of where I am at is the meaning of life. Life has absolutely no meaning or purpose or need or anything whatsoever. There is absolutely no purpose to us being here other than the meaning we choose to give it. Because that's it, really. We are just animals that live on this earth, but we choose to give it meaning, and we make the meaning of our life. That's kind of what I've come to from the 50 plus interviews I've done.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
So for some people, it is the glorification of God. I've met a few people that are very religious, and for them, it's very much about honoring God in their life. For other people, it's not. For other people, it is, as you say, making the world a better place. Love. Lots of people are in the bracket where you are in terms of making the world a better place, or it being about love and kindness and being a good human, I guess.
Yeah.
But I guess that's also the people I attract, because I don't interview people who are bad humans.
Yeah, I can see why you would not, because who would want to do that?
So anyway, Deborah, thank you so much for your time today. It's been lovely to talk to you, and all the best with your books and whatever comes next for you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. It's lovely to be here with you, and thanks for having me.
That's a pleasure. And that was Life, Passion and Business with Paul Harvey and my guest, Deborah Agar. If you would like to contact Deborah, you can find her across all social media channels. She certainly is on LinkedIn, Facebook and Twitter. You can find her website at radiantmedialabs.com, and all of these links will be available at Life, Passion and Business underneath the podcast player as per usual. So thanks for taking the time and getting to the end of this podcast. As ever, if you could leave a review, like us or share us, it's always appreciated. Other than that, I would like to say thank you for your time and attention, and I will catch you next time. Fashion and Business with Paul Harvey and my guest, Georgina El-Mushady. As always, you can get in touch with my guest using the links on the website lifepassionandbusiness.com. These links will be under the podcast player at the bottom of the page. I mentioned Change Your World every day in the intro, and I want to tell you a little bit more about it. This project is online coaching, and it grew out of the Change Your World conference. It features many of the speakers that appear at the conference, and it's about daily practice, starting at 7 a.m. on a Facebook Live check-in. The project is in its second week, and we're already seeing some astounding results. People are already stepping up and finding their power. They're exploring what they want, taking risks in the safe space that is the group. It is amazing to watch people identifying these things, looking at their lives, and they're identifying what it is they need to do to change in their lives. I have to say, I am privileged and inspired to be part of this project. So are you looking to change? If you're looking to make changes in your life or get more satisfaction out of And that was Life Passion. I cannot encourage you enough. Find something that works for you, whatever it is, but it will be or require some form of daily practice. Change does not come by thinking and waiting. Change takes thinking, planning, and acting. So come and join us. Change your world every day could be what you're looking for. We are there to help you explore and discover the daily practice that works for you. Over the next year, we will be exploring all manners and forms of practice. Lastly, we're looking what it means to be involved in personal development with some simple practices that you could start with. This week, we're exploring some of those tools using journaling. All of this material will become a resource which you can access as soon as you join the group. So what does it cost to join the group? Well, the cost is very simple. It's £1 a day. And what you get from that pound is all the material available instantly to you, plus the support and accountability of a group of people who all want to see you succeed. If you would like more information about Change Your World Every Day, go to changeyourworld.me or find the links at thelifepassionandbusiness.com. So that is it for me this week. I'd like to thank you for your time and attention, and I will catch you next time.